I'd now like to introduce our final speaker, Jumana Beya. Jumana is an associate professor at Macquarie University and the proud daughter of Lebanese migrant.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming out again. I'd like to begin by especially thanking First Nations communities who remain our most solid allies. And our deepest gratitude to them for extending to us their land as we fight for Palestine's liberation. We've had a break for a few weeks from these marches, but what a few weeks it has been. I work at a university, and I'd like to focus on two things that have unfolded there. Universities are not detached from the real world, I can promise you that. Quite the opposite. They are bellwethers of what is possible and what is coming in terms of political suppression. I say this because universities are meant to be spaces where people teach, where they research, and where we explore ideas, and importantly, where we make conclusions based on evidence. Right now, all of that is being eroded before our very eyes in relation to speaking about Palestine. Let me start with my colleague, my friend, Dr. Randa Abdel Fattah, a former DECRA fellow and the current recipient of an ARC Future Fellowship. Her grant has been suspended by my university and the ARC following a conference she spoke at QUT. Would you believe that no one at the ARC or at Macquarie has seen the full text of this speech? That much was admitted to by the ARC at the Senate estimates the other night. They have relied instead on a few sentences printed in that hack rag, the Murdoch Press, The Australian. The claim is that Randa is not using her funds in the way that she stated in her application. This is frankly untrue. But if it were just about reviewing her spending and her budget, why has a spokesperson at Macquarie said that they can only deliver their investigation findings in the second half of this year? Does it really take 6 months to review a budget? A key component of the success of winning ARC funding is to show how you can make your research or your expertise accessible to the wider community. We call that in the business community engagement. Let me say this very clearly. There is no other academic in the social sciences or in the humanities that does this more effectively than Randa. That promise to engage community is written across her entire grant application and in the execution of that project. Her work, and I apologize for using a non-halal phrase right now, but you'll realize why in a minute. Her work passes the so-called pub test that Labour Party charlatans wielded against us researchers when they had the hide to veto so many of our grants. Incidentally, the ALP legislated the end of ministerial interference in the ARC funding. And yet, Education Minister Clare wrote to the ARC demanding that they investigate Randa. That shame indeed. That promise lasted very long from the ALP. Randa's work passes the pub test in the best possible ways. QUT was a combined academic and public event. Her speech was pitched for public outreach. For doing her job, she is being punished. All this tells me is that investigation is not about her spending. The ARC representative admitted as much during Senate estimates as well. It is yet another episode in a racially driven attack, one laced with misogyny too, against my colleague, who against all the threats of lawfare and bullying from lobbyists continues to raise awareness about the violence the Palestinians have endured for 6 months and counting. Her words have power, and the lobbyists and members of 5A who despise her have run out of believable arguments, counter-arguments. What they are doing instead is using university management, using the ARC, and using politicians to shut us all up, to suppress, no, let me be, you know, accurate, they're silencing, they're trying to silence our right to political expression wholesale. Is this the democracy that Australia wants? Is this the world that we want to live in? Let me turn now to another deplorable move by universities already mentioned. The introduction of a new definition of anti-Semitism that obscures more than it clarifies. I won't read it out to you, but when you look at it, you'll see it is filled with clauses, with very long sentences and efforts to balance out the harm that it intends. I'm telling you about its form because it is an insight into who wrote this definition. Apparently, late last year, provosts from Australia's leading 8 universities met with the anti-Semitism envoy to draft this definition. Those extra clauses, shoved in sloppily in almost every sentence, highlight attempts from some in the room to make the definition appear okay. Phrases like most but on all, but not all, such and such isn't but can be anti-Semitic. Those are the phrases you'll see. I don't know all the people that were part of this exercise, but I understand that a couple of them work in post-colonial research. Those clauses maybe came from them, or maybe from others trying to cling to some semblance of academic freedom. What they all really needed to do was reach for Edward Said's 1979 essay, Zionism from the Standpoint of Its Victims. Because no matter how much you twist that definition, it willfully erases Zionism as a lived reality for Palestinians, for Lebanese and Arab communities. I don't say all of this to lament my own family's personal experiences, but also my teaching and research about the region and my attempts to take my knowledge into communal spaces. A threat hangs over me and people like Randolph and so many others. And that is the point of the definition, that is the point of its vagueness, to raise the spectre of the threat so that we shy away. And it leaves it to university managers to decide what is anti-Semitic. Given the power of the Murdoch press and those lobbyists that we've already seen enough of, we all know what it means. I cannot fathom how a bunch of professors from our leading universities were involved in defining this word, and this is the outcome that they came with. This definition might be intended to protect a minority community, but what it will do instead is target academics speaking up for Palestine, just like the new hate speech laws will target Palestinian-aligned activists. I know, I'm not stupid, I know Australia has a problem with all forms of racism, but here is a key difference. Anti-Arab racism is being nurtured by centres of power. They protect against anti-Semitism while throwing burning rocks at the Arab community and its allies. There is so much contempt and hate for us, so much I had no idea of the depth of it. Reflecting on complaints against Randa, against Antoinette Latouf's treatment at the ABC, the attacks against Professor Chelsea Watogo at QUT for hosting that anti-racism conference, I have to ask how many brown women do they intend to take on? There are more than three, I cannot count them all, of course. The enlightened people of the West love to talk about how suppressed, I should say, or oppressed brown women are by their own communities and cultures, but love even more to attack us when we surprise them by showing how determined and fierce we are and how hard we will fight for justice. We are such a problem for those centres of power. About 9 months ago, I gave my first speech at one of these rallies. At the end, a man came up to me. Actually, I'll tell you who the man is. He won't mind if I identify him. He's the most manly of men. It's our friend over there, Bob the drummer. He came up to me and he said, "You women are amazing. One of you equates to 1,000 men. If all of us men are killed, I'm not worried, because it is you women who are going to free Palestine." As it turns out, the Randas, the Antoinettes and the Chelseas are not just freeing Palestine. They are saving higher education from snuffing out academic freedom definition by definition. They are saving the ABC. They are saving the white feminists who have abandoned us all. They are saving the ALP from its dance with right-wing extremism. And finally, they are saving this Western-loving democracy from itself. Thank you very much. Free Palestine!